We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. This week, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn signed a law that will bring major changes to the state's workers' compensation system. The supporters say that it will save Illinois businesses hundreds of millions of dollars every year. However, some critics counter that these savings result from deep cuts in payments to doctors and hospitals that treat people who are hurt on the job. In this hour of Focus, we'll try to take a look at these changes and what they mean for businesses and workers. And we have two guests joining us, both of them joining us on the phone. Bob Bruno is professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at University of Illinois Chicago. He's also director of the Labor Education Program. He's been a guest on this program before to talk about labor issues. Also joining us is David Menchetti. He is an attorney with the firm of Cullen, Haskins, Nicholson, and Menchetti. He concentrates his practice in the area of injuries to workers on the job. That's his exclusive area of practice. He has represented injured workers here in Illinois before the Workers' Compensation Commission, the circuit courts, and also the appellate and supreme courts. At one point, he served as counsel to Illinois State Senate President Emil Jones and advised about and drafted reforms to the Workers' Compensation Act in 1989 and 1991. He also serves as an advisor to the Illinois AFL-CIO on workers' compensation matters. As we talk, questions are welcome. We hope people will try to be brief, just so we can get in as many callers as possible. And I hope you can stay on target with the topic. Questions, though, are welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. And Professor Bruno, hello.
Hello.
And Mr. Menchetti, hello.
Hello.
Thanks very much for talking with us. It seems in looking at this, and maybe I'll start here with Bob Bruno, just to get a general kind of comment, that people who represent workers' interests say that they think this is not good for workers. People who represent business say it doesn't really get at the real problem that they think is fraud. But the only person who seems really excited about this is the governor. How exactly do we think about just how significant this piece of legislation is?
Well, look, any changes that are made to laws designed to create incentives for employers to create safe workplaces are significant on the face. And so Illinois has a law that had presented those kinds of workplaces and created the right incentives and was seen as a strong law. And so changing that at least raises questions about whether workers will have those same rights, whether or not employers will still have the kinds of incentives they need to make sure that workplaces are not hazardous. And therefore, I think that the changes that have occurred are not supported by the evidence. I don't think fraud is, in fact, a significant problem. I don't know that there was real strong rationale for making these changes. They seem to be born much more out of a kind of ideological ferment that seems to be sweeping across the states as a result of the ongoing economic crisis. So I think David's in a position to probably speak more authoritatively to how the law has changed and what its impact might be. But I would say, from an historical perspective, that any changes that that weaken protections for workers create incentives for employers to put workers at risk. And that's a bad thing for the employer. That's a bad thing for the economy. It's most certainly a bad thing for the workers.
Well, I can pass things over here then to David Menchetti. Here, as I mentioned, people will understand that in your role as an attorney is to represent the interests of workers who believe that they've been hurt on the job. What do you think this is going to mean?
Well, I certainly admit to that bias right up front. My perspective on this is from the point of view of a lawyer who represents injured workers. So that's the perspective that I am able to give today, and it's really the only perspective I'm able to give. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these are significant changes that were enacted by the legislature and were signed by the governor this past Tuesday on June 28th, which is when this bill becomes effective. So if there are people out there or entities out there who are saying that these are not significant enough changes in the workers' compensation system, they're just dead wrong. These are extremely significant changes, perhaps the most significant changes in the last 35 years or so. As one example of that, to get into the specifics a little bit, under current law, injured workers have the absolute freedom of choice to choose at least two medical providers to treat them for their work-related injuries. This new law will restrict that choice to only one choice where the employer has a preferred provider program for providing medical treatment to injured workers. So in just that one limited area, choice has been reduced by 50%. And that's a big, significant change for the people and the critics out there who are saying that this bill did not go far enough. That's one prime example of where it went extremely far.
Let me just add a follow-up on that, because here this is a point on which I'm a little bit confused by what I've tried to read about this. And as you say, that before, workers could seek out whatever doctor they wanted, and that the changes here mean that people's choice will be restricted. They will have to choose from a doctor from an approved list. Now, I also read, though, that this was something that somebody's comment on this was that the legislation didn't actually mandate that, and they doubted whether that change, in fact, would go into effect. Now, what I hear you saying, Mr. Menchetti, is, in fact, that will happen, and that one result will be that for injured workers, they won't have the kind of choice they have now about what doctor they're going to see.
That's correct, because what this new legislation says is that when the employer has a preferred provider network, that is considered to be one of the worker's two choices. So the injured worker would only have one free choice outside of the preferred provider network, whereas today, prior to the time that this law became effective, that injured worker had two free choices no matter where his employer wanted him to seek medical treatment. So as far as I'm concerned, what this new legislation does is when an employer has a preferred provider network, it reduces choice by 50%, and that's a significant reduction.
Maybe I'll come back to Bob Bruno, and you could just explain a little bit how the system, how the workers' compensation system is set up in the state. I would expect that people who have had no encounter with it would really have no idea. How exactly does it work?
Well, actually, your best person to ask in terms of the nuts and bolts would, in fact, be David. But just to lend some historical context, it was in the early part of the 20th century when workman compensation laws began to be enforced, passed by the states as a result of high incidences of very dangerous and fatal industrial accidents. And Illinois passed its first law in 1911, and it went into effect in 1912 and had been amended a number of times, 1913, 1951, and more contemporary periods. And each time those changes occurred, they addressed coverage, they addressed benefits, they addressed the process by which someone would apply for those benefits, setting up a commission, a board, to hear workman compensation claims. And I think that, you know, in terms of the ease of the system, the accessibility of the system, the process was always to make it more friendly and make it more accessible. And the law passing workman's comp and amending workman's comp was done in a way that brought the employers to the table, that brought the employers and organized labor specifically to the table to jointly
sit down to talk about what the issues were, which means that you end up with a law that has always, frankly, given the parties a voice in how the system is used and how it's operating. And that process has served all of the parties very well. And I think that's an important thing to note when criticism is raised about, well, it's bad for employers. In fact, employers have had the opportunity to actually be part of a process in which their voice is included in the actual researching of the bills and writing the bill and amending the bill.
Mm-hmm. And so workers file a claim, and we could talk some more in detail perhaps about how claims are evaluated, but workers file a claim, it's evaluated. If it's found to have merit, then payments to the workers come out of a fund into which businesses pay.
That's correct. That's correct.
All right. And I don't know, then Mr. Manchetti, you want to talk a little bit more about, well, what so you have a worker. This person believes that he has been injured as a result of doing his job. What's the process that's involved in making a claim?
The process involved in making a claim is that an injured worker must file a claim with the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission, which is the state agency that has been specifically set up to handle work-related injuries. And that's because, as Professor Bruno has already said, essentially what workers' compensation, the Workers' Compensation Act does is replace an injured worker's right to sue his employer in court. So the only recourse and the only action that an injured worker can bring against his employer in order to recover for injuries sustained on the job is through the Workers' Compensation Act, and that's done through the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission, which, as I've said, is the state agency set up specifically to handle these matters. I want to correct maybe one misimpression, though.
Mm-hmm.
Employers do not pay into any kind of state fund to pay for these work-related injuries. Each employer in the state of Illinois is responsible for the injuries that occur, you know, on that employer's job, so to speak. And there's only two ways to be properly covered as an employer in the state of Illinois to handle the responsibility to pay for work-related injuries, and that's to be insured by a private insurance company or to be properly self-insured after that authority has been granted by the Workers' Compensation Commission.
Oh, okay.
So each employer pays its own workers' compensation liabilities to its own injured workers. There's no state funding of this program. Now, the state itself, of course, has employees who work for the state, and the state pays its own employees for workers' compensation benefits, but I don't want anybody to have a misimpression that somehow the state is funding the overall workers' compensation program for all employers in the state of Illinois, because that's just not true.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we got that cleared up, because obviously I was misunderstanding that. Let me then ask you a further question. If a person files a claim, it is reviewed, the claim is denied, do they have some recourse? Can they somehow appeal this?
Yes, certainly they can, and that process is handled, once again, through the Workers' Compensation Commission. So the Workers' Compensation Commission is not only the regulatory authority in the state of Illinois dealing with workers' compensation issues like insurance issues and fraud and so forth. It also is the adjudicative agency, and what I mean by that is there are judges at the Workers' Compensation Commission, both at the trial level, and those judges are called arbitrators, and at the appeals level, and those judges are called commissioners, that specifically decide workers' compensation cases or issues that are disputed by the employer. So, for example, when an employer says that an injured worker should be back at work and has cut off the benefits that are due to that injured worker, if that injured worker disputes that cutoff of benefits, the case can be litigated at the Workers' Compensation Commission to determine whether those benefits are due to the injured worker.
Mm-hmm. And so the outside of that system, though, then there's no possibility for workers to if claims are denied and they still think that they argue that their injury is a result of their job, that outside of that system there's no possibility for workers to sue companies.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. for the injuries to the employee on the job, workers' compensation is what we call the exclusive remedy, and that's specifically listed in the Workers' Compensation Act itself. The only remedy, the only recourse that an injured worker has against his employer for injuries on the job is through the workers' compensation law.
Well, let me ask one further question here, because the people who have said that they think that this change, this new law, is good, say that what it will do, it will reduce costs for employers, and a big part of that does have to do with the reimbursement rates for doctors, and maybe we'll talk some more about that. But I've also seen people suggest that one result of these changes is that, in fact, that we're probably going to have more litigation and not less, and that that's one reason that people question the projected savings. Do you think that there actually will end up being more litigation because people will make claims and they will be denied, and then they'll carry on the process in terms of appeals as far as it can go?
No, I don't believe that these changes will somehow increase litigation. In fact, there are several provisions in this law which are designed to reduce litigation specifically. For example, there's a provision in this law for tightening up what's called utilization review, which is the way employers judge whether a particular kind of medical treatment is necessary after an injury, and I think that by tightening up those requirements, it's actually going to reduce litigation. So that's only one example of the way this new legislation will, I think, reduce litigation. I don't really see any possibility that this new legislation is going to somehow increase litigation.
We have a moment?
Go ahead.
Thinking about this question of where workers who are, of course, citizens, get access to some kind of system of relief for harm done. The historical precedents for workman compensation laws grew out of the fact that subjecting what were poorly paid and poorly resourced workers into a very expensive private court system ended up providing very little relief. So one did not really have the resources to go into court to take on large mining companies, steel companies, industrial concerns, and any kind of possible relief in the courts would be insignificant. There would be the occasional victory, and of course the employer always had the threat of a jury of their peers ruling against the company. But the courts really weren't a suitable location for relief. The kind of relief, the kind of tort relief that any citizen would expect to have. So we have a workman's compensation system, which provides a much more manageable system, which does respond to grievances. It responds to harm being done in a no-fault way, and there is an attempt then to make that worker whole. So keeping that in mind and understanding that the courts don't really provide average men, working men and women, with a suitable response to harsh and dangerous workplaces, then we need to preserve a workman's compensation system which for workers in America serves as their court of appeals. It serves as the regulatory body that provides relief. And in that way, we preserve the rights of democratic societies for workers who otherwise would really, really be behind the eight ball trying to take on their employers with private means in private courts.
Let me introduce again the guests for anybody who might have just tuned in the last few minutes. Bob Bruno is the last person you heard. He's professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at University of Illinois Chicago. He's director of the Labor Education Program. Also joining us from Chicago is David Menchetti. He is an attorney with the firm of Cullen, Haskins, Nicholson, and Menchetti. And he is someone who in his practice deals exclusively with workers' compensation litigation. Questions are welcome. We're talking about recent changes in the state's workers' compensation law just signed into effect this week by Illinois Governor Pat Quinn. Questions are welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that too, will-talk@illinois.edu. I want to get on to another issue here, and that is for those people, some lawmakers, some people speaking for Illinois businesses, those people who said the real problem here was fraud and that this does not address it. This has to do with something called causation. And what that means is establishing that the injury actually was the result of the job. So there may indeed be people who have real injuries, but the question is whether or not they were caused by their work. David Manchetti, you can explain now, as claims are being reviewed, how do people have to prove or how do they go about trying to establish that the injury was a result of their job?
Of course, an injured worker has to prove that an injury was the result of his job. Wherever this misunderstanding or misconception or misstatement came from, that injured workers do not have to prove that their injury was a result of their job, I don't know where that came from, but it's just dead wrong. There is a burden of proof, and that burden of proof is squarely on the injured worker, and the injured worker must show that the incident at work, that the accident at work was a cause of his work-related injury. So that cause standard and that burden of proof standard has always been the standard in Illinois. It has not changed recently. It's been the standard for 100 years since this law was enacted. It is, by the way, the standard in all other court systems in the state of Illinois. So, for example, when you're involved in an automobile accident and you sue the other driver in court, that same causation standard is the burden of proof in court as it is at the Workers' Compensation Commission. So it was just an absolute misstatement or misunderstanding by some people that there is no such causation standard in workers' compensation law. An injured worker must prove that the incident was a cause of his work-related injury.
And it should be noted that there have been anecdotal claims. There have been sort of speculative analysis about how much fraud is in the system. But in fact, there really isn't any hard data that's been subject to very good social science analysis that establishes that the system is rife with a problem. One could, of course, expect that there will always be some cases that are not legit, but that does not rise to the level of a systemic problem that justifies a major public policy change. And what is really concerning, certainly to someone like myself, is that we see changes. And then this is part of a larger movement across the states of laws being changed, impacting provisions, benefits, protections that apply to workers that are not based on really good social science measurements, good metrics, good tests. In fact, where there have been good studies done in a variety of public policy fields, and typically the results show that there is no burdensome quality, that really this is not a systemic problem. And it's somewhat frightening to think that we're making public policy in the state of Illinois, in the state of Michigan, in the state of Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, not based
on the facts and on independent analysis, but on what seems to be a kind of fear that is driving, unfortunately, a kind of bipartisan a move to chip away at a lot of the employment-related protections that have served both workers and employers for many, many decades. Mm.
Well, let me ask you about one thing in particular. Now, maybe it's unfair to pick this as an example, but it's the kind of thing that's gotten a lot of attention and will influence, I'm sure, the way people think about this. And it has to do with injury claims filed by people who work for the Illinois Department of Corrections. There has been a lot of attention devoted to cases of worker injury for people who work at the Menard Correctional Center down in the southern part of the state. Since 2008, at least 260 claims have been filed. Something like almost $10 million has been paid out for all types of workers' comp claims from Menard, including apparently a lot of people who have said that they're suffering carpal tunnel syndrome from opening and closing the locks on cell doors. Well, and this, again, may not at all be typical, but I think when people read stories like that and when they hear stories like that, that influences their feeling that, in fact, something may really be wrong here and it may be a system that needs to be fixed.
I want to let David respond to the variety of cases, maybe the total volume of cases, perhaps how that's changed, and he may have some greater insight in speaking to some of these more exotic kind of workplace injuries. But, you know, I think what's worth noting there is that, out of what might be, I think, above greater than 50,000, perhaps, claims, you find a number of claims that make for a good copy, that make for a good headline, and it becomes this kind of sexy story that you can hold up as the sort of poster child for a system gone wrong, and you can get some mileage out of that, and that then triggers a lot of unreasonable and kind of speculative conversation on the street. It's good for radio ratings. It's good for selling newspapers. However, we should be holding the governor, and we should be holding the Speaker and the Senate President and both parties in Springfield to a much higher standard. They can look at data. They can do analysis. They can spend a little time and do some really good analysis on whether or not they have a problem. We shouldn't be changing policy on the basis of, well, we've got this sort of exotic situation, and how exactly does carpal tunnel occur? Is this real? Is this not real? And then reacting to it, out of fear. I think a higher standard just has to be held to when you change public policy.
Sure. And I'm certainly interested in whatever Dave Menchetti has to say. I just again want to mention about specifically, and this may be unfair, but that, about the Menard situation, that it is in fact the subject of investigations. There's a federal grand jury in Springfield looking into workers' comp mm-hmm. claims. There's also the Illinois Department of Insurance is doing a criminal investigation of these comp claims. So there are people that apparently mm-hmm. feel that there may be a serious problem here. But again, it may be that you'd have to say that this is not this is a bad example, and it may be bad in and of itself, but it's not representative mm-hmm. of the system as a whole.
Yeah, the only statistic that I know of regarding fraud in the workers' compensation system is the statistic that is reported by the Workers' Compensation Fraud Unit, which is located within the Department of Insurance that you just mentioned. In the latest reporting period, which I think dates up to 2010, the fraud unit discovered what they believe to be about $6 million worth of fraud in this system. To put that into context, it's a $3 billion a year system. So that's, if I'm doing my math correctly, I think that's 0.2%.
There you go.
Our fraudulent benefits. But what's even more interesting to think about is that of that 2% or 0.2% fraud, two-thirds of that is employer fraud as opposed to being employee fraud. What is employer fraud in workers' comp? For example, when an employer underreports its payroll in order to reduce its workers' compensation premium, that's considered to be fraud. When an employer misclassifies a group of its employees as being in a less risky occupation than they actually are in order to reduce its workers' compensation premiums. That's considered to be fraud. So of that $6 million of fraud that the fraud unit discovered last year, $4 million of that was employer fraud of the type that I've just described.
We are talking this morning in this hour of Focus about recent changes in Illinois' worker compensation law. We'll talk more after a very short break. This is Focus.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois. Donated blood saves the lives of the injured and critically ill. There are no substitutes for donated blood, and donation takes only 45 minutes. Blood donation, it's about life. More information is on the web at bloodservices.org.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Just a quick mention that in the second hour today, we'll talk some more about what happened in Springfield in this past session of the General Assembly, trying to look at some of the other issues, and certainly workers' compensation was one of them, but there are a number of other issues that were dealt with, including things like redistricting, school reform, gambling expansion. Celeste Quinn will be hosting the second hour today, and she will be talking with Ray Long. He's a reporter for the Chicago Tribune, has covered Springfield for quite a while, and also Bob Rich, director of the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs. That's the second hour of the show today. You can find out what we're doing here in the days ahead. You can also listen to past programs by going to our website, will.illinois.edu. In this hour of Focus, we're talking about recent changes in workers' compensation here in Illinois. We have two guests. They're both with us on the telephone. Bob Bruno, he's professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at U of I, Chicago. And also David Menchetti, he is an attorney with the firm of Cullen, Hoskins, Nicholson, and Menchetti, and his practice is devoted to workers' compensation litigation. So questions welcome, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, just, one of the things I wanted to ask you both, and again, maybe I'll start with Bob Bruno here, just given the fact that some people in Springfield in the legislature have said that this is a this problem is not completely dealt with, that they're still concerned with this causation business, this business of fraud. I wonder if you think that, if not, probably not this year, but maybe next year, they're going to come back to this, and there's going to be more work done trying to get at what people see as another problem. I mean, are we going to come back to this issue next year?
Well, that's a that's a good question. I think that typically, if people are sincere in making changes that are helpful, you need to allow those changes to operate for good or for ill, and some time then to assess. It would seem rather foolish to sort of rush right back in the next session and start to tinker again, to push a little further without any real sense of how these changes are operating. Now, given my previous comments about what I think is the foolishness of the state acting on more speculation than on good data, I am concerned that they'll continue to tinker. And once you have made some changes and you can find some degree of bipartisan support for doing it, it certainly becomes that much more likely that both parties will continue to tinker. My hope is that they'll pause, and that would be the wiser the choice, and give this a little bit more time. It may have a lot to do with a sense of how people are feeling politically and what they feel the sort of political mood around this issue is, what sort of pushback they get from both employers and from the state's labor movement.
We have not touched on this issue of the cuts in reimbursements to physicians who are treating people who are injured. And if there's a big savings here, and some people are projecting hundreds of millions of dollars, it may or may not be that much. If there's a big savings, I think a lot of people say, well, that's where it's coming from. It's coming from cuts in what doctors are doing. And I wonder particularly here, maybe I'll turn to Dave Menchetti, whether you think that that one result of that might in fact be that there are doctors who will say, well, if that's what the reimbursement is going to be, I'm just not going to do this. I'm not going to take injured workers I'm not going to take them as patients.
Well, that certainly is the fear, and that's what we are going to closely monitor as we go forward here. So there has been a reduction in the medical reimbursement fee schedule for treating work-related injuries, and it's a 30% across-the-board reduction for all kinds of medical providers, doctors, surgeons, physical therapists, you know, x-ray labs, every fee that could possibly be charged in the workers' compensation system has been reduced by 30% across the board. That is for services rendered on or after September 1, 2011. So that particular provision does not come into effect until September 1, 2011. So after that date, we're going to very, very closely monitor the effect that that reduction might have on access to medical treatment. Under current law, doctors were already limited as to what they could be reimbursed under workers' compensation. This medical fee schedule, which sets that limitation, has been in place since 2005. And whether you agree that medical fee schedule saved the employers of the state of Illinois any money since 2005, I think what everybody has to agree on is that the fee schedule that was already in place prior to this 30% reduction, at the very least, had the effect of slowing the rate of increase of medical costs. And there are some people who estimate that it slowed the rate of increase by 50% compared to medical inflation or other inflationary measures. So there was already a limitation on fees in Illinois. This new legislation slashes that already existing limitation by 30%.
And it's worth noting that it is a backdoor way of further restricting the access of workers / citizens to a regulatory system that provides them with relief. So it's not just the other provisions of the bill, some that David has spoken about, but now on the back end, if you will, attacking the reimbursement rates, restricting the number of providers, that is shrinking access, if you will, to doctors who will participate in the system, and it's a way of further reducing what would be those democratic rights that we would expect all citizens to have access to if they have legitimate claims brought on by any sort of, you know, tort action, any kind of improper behavior towards them. So that, I think David is right. This is really a concern and needs to be closely watched, and it's a particularly nasty additional piece to the bill.
Sure, and it's a further limitation on that idea of freedom of choice that we've talked about, because although we've retained freedom of choice, if you're choosing from a much reduced list of doctors who are willing to take these kinds of cases, and by the way, doctors don't have to take workers' compensation patients. They can choose not to do that. So if injured workers are being forced to choose from a reduced list, it has an effect on choice.
Now, I wonder, I don't know how closely the two of you follow the politics of this, but it certainly, this bill had a rather tortured path to passage, and in fact, it looked as if at the last minute, or in the waning days and hours of the session, that it wasn't going to pass, because Republicans in the House said, well, they were really concerned about this last point that we were just talking about what this is going to mean for physicians and the amounts of reimbursement they would get for treating workers. And if not for apparently the pressure exerted by the Speaker, Mr. Madigan, and also some additional pressure coming from the Senate, where over there they said, look, you guys in the House, if you don't pass this, what we're going to do is we're going to pass a law that just abolishes the system outright. So Madigan managed to get the votes, and it passed. But I'm interested if you have any sort of insight on what happened there. And in particular, I guess, Mr. Manchetti, you know, what you think, there seem to be people concerned about what this means for doctors. Well, what does these changes, what do they mean for attorneys, or do they mean anything for attorneys?
Well, they do mean something for attorneys. There are some new rules that attorneys who represent injured workers are going to have to be aware of about how these cases are handled and the value of the cases and how that value is determined. For example, one of the provisions in this new law, for the first time ever in the 100-year history of this law, allows the use of the so-called AMA guidelines to determine the value of permanent disability. So there are some new important rules that lawyers are going to have to learn in order to represent injured workers in these kinds of cases. You know, regarding the political question that you had, I do want to mention that at least part of the Republican reluctance to support this bill wholeheartedly is that some of the business interests were claiming that this bill did not go far enough
Correct.
In reducing the rights
right.
of injured workers. So it wasn't just a matter of the fee schedule reduction being the only reason why some Republicans voted against this bill. There was also this idea that the bill did not go far enough in reducing the rights of injured workers.
Professor Bruno, you want to add anything to that?
Well, you know, David actually made the point that I wanted to make, just to sort of round out what I think was not just an additional, you know, reason for opposing, but what was the fundamental reason. The particularly I think frustrating a piece of this is that Speaker Madigan did lend his support to the reform, and I've said on a few other occasions that I think it's important for listeners to see the change to workman comp here in a much larger context of attacks that have occurred towards public sector pensions, for example, collective bargaining rights, workman's compensation protections in other states, as the states experience various levels of really financial stress, and Illinois, of course, being very high on that list, it seems to have opened up a bipartisan space for both of the parties to find a scapegoat, to find some easy money. It seems as if workers, in one way or the other, are targeted and asked for a pound of flesh. And again, I want to keep repeating, not based on any good analysis, which then leads one to speculate that it becomes part of an ideological movement. It becomes part of a political agenda. And to see Democrats in the state of Illinois, I think jumping on that bandwagon is particularly distressing.
We have just maybe about 5 minutes left in this part of the show. Just again, let me introduce the guest, Bob Bruno, the last person that you heard. He's a professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at University of Illinois Chicago. Also joining us is David Manchetti. He is an attorney in Chicago who works in the area of workers' compensation litigation. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Also, you can send us an email, will-talk at illinois.edu. One thing, again, I want to give a chance to talk a little bit about, there were some people who said that the changes were necessary because the workers' comp system that we had adversely affected the business climate in Illinois, that the costs to businesses were very high, and this was, again, one of those things that either is a disincentive for businesses to locate in Illinois or perhaps an incentive for businesses to leave the state of Illinois. Let me ask Bob Bruno, in what way do you think that the system as it was, maybe as it still is, does that indeed affect the business climate in the state?
look, it's legitimate to be concerned about a business climate, right? It's legitimate to sort of define that and think about what that is. But by most standards, by most measurements, Illinois does not have a quote-unquote bad business climate. And typically when the term business climate or bad business climate is used, it's used not in a rational, logical way based on good comparables. It's used in an ideological way to try to sort of gain some advantage. There's no evidence that businesses were leaving the state in any sort of systematic way, principally because workman compensation law was too favorable to workers. Similar complaints have been made having to do with state minimum wage laws. Similar complaints have been made with levels of taxation, and frankly, they've been made for all of the 20th century, and now as we get into the 21st century. And more often than not, when you do analysis, when you compare with states, even border states, you don't find that that you're losing work, that you're losing tax dollars, that you're losing economic opportunity because of workmen's compensation laws. Something important to remember: a system that is working, a system that's stable, a system that enables employers to have some sense of what their sort of total operation cost will be, along with having access to skilled workers, well-educated workers, access to materials, access to logistics, really contribute much more to the business climate than the particular piece of public policy that impacts worker benefits. So, I mean, I think it was a false argument to make. I don't think more work is going to come into the state as a result of doing this. I mean, just to hold on for one more second on this topic, there's similar complaints about prevailing wage laws, laws that say you have to pay a prevailing wage to workers who are working on government-funded projects. There have been states who have repealed those prevailing wage laws, and lo and behold, when you look at what happens to their employment climate over the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, you find that they didn't increase any employment. There was no statistical change. In fact, in some cases, they go down. So I think this was a canard. I don't think it was a legitimate argument.
All right. We have one caller here. I want to make sure we get them in. Someone in Indiana on our line 4. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. Well, since I'm from another wonderful state that's trying to stick it to the works of whatever stripe, I was wondering, in the practical sense, when this all hits the ground running, what sort of situations would an attorney not accept because he knows the cards are stacked against him to be able to prove something, whether a guy had metacarpal problems or whatever? Can it be broken down that way? And if so, what's the answer to all this, if there is one? Thanks.
All right. Well, it sounds like a question for David Manchetti.
Well, for example, this new legislation severely limits the recovery in those carpal tunnel cases that you talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So an attorney, would know going in that kind of case is going to be worth less than it was before. So that's certainly a consideration that is going to be taken into account. Carpal tunnel cases specifically are worth less today than they were on Monday of this week. So it's just the way it is.
Hmm. We're coming down to the point where we have maybe just a couple of minutes left, and maybe I'll just give you a chance to do some summing up, perhaps, for Bob Bruno. What would you like people to come? What ideas would you like people to come away with?
Well, really, quite simply, that a public policy that creates effective, real, legitimate incentives for business owners to ensure safe working conditions is good public policy. It's good for the state. It's good for the business climate. It is an ethical and a moral justified position for the workers themselves. And anything that threatens that brings us back to the bad late 19th century, early 20th century days of industrial sweatshops.
Hmm. Well, David Menchetti?
Well, I think the real measure of whether these new changes have been effective will be whether they reduce insurance premiums for the employers of the state of Illinois. The vast majority of employers are insured for workers' compensation liability, and that is their only workers' compensation cost, what they pay to their insurance company. So unless these changes reduce insurance premiums, you know, their effectiveness will not have been as great as what they were purported to be. Yeah.
Well, that's I assume that that's what people are expecting will happen. But I think also, you know, people have tossed around these figures of hundreds of millions of dollars that will be saved. I think some other people say not only might it not be that much, but even if it is a significant amount of money, it might take some time. It could take years to pile up that kind of savings. How long would you expect that it might take to really to be able to answer the question, does this save businesses money or not?
Well, it may never happen, because the point is the insurance companies can put those savings right in their own pockets.
Mm-hmm.
They're not required to pass on the savings to their insured clients. This law will require a recalculation of insurance premiums as of September 1 based on the savings of this bill. The problem is that recalculation is simply advisory. It doesn't require insurance companies to reduce their insurance premiums. It just tells them, you know, if you're being honest about this, we've saved you money, and you should pass that on to your insured. So we'll see whether that happens.
All right. Well, there we'll leave it. We are two guests this morning, David Menchetti. He is an attorney in Chicago with the firm of Cullen, Haskins, Nicholson, and Menchetti. His practice is workers' compensation. Mr. Menchetti, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Bob Bruno, he's a professor in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois Chicago, also director of the Labor Education Program there in Chicago. And Professor Bruno, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.